Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, May 7th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Paul Curry chats Champions League. Damien Lawler details the latest Gaelic Games news stories. While Nadine Doherty brings us up to date on the Ladies Football Provincial Championship action. Plus, we'll round up today's sports news headlines. So if you want to have your say, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company, Paul Curry. It's great to have your company. How are you?
Thanks very much, Shane. Very well. Very well. Looking forward to another night of Champions League, particularly
not,
after what we had last night.
It's not. What's the point?
It's not.
I don't know. I actually found it hard to sleep last night. I was just scrolling on Twitter, just rewatching Jan Summer saves, and I was buzzed. It was like I'm after playing 90 minutes myself. Just
it was exhausting, wasn't it?
It was
McElroy watching the Masters on the final day, sort of exhaustion.
It was Leinster Northampton. That's how good it was. Your weekend sporting highlight for Monday, which Alan Colley was complimenting you, I think, perhaps in inverted commas, last night that
That's
you chose
my,
rugby.
My experience of coming through a private school and senior cup rugby is...
It's all coming out
now. I can lean on it every now and again, Shane.
It's all coming out now. Listen, we're going to get stuck into reviewing that one in detail, but a couple of news headlines starting with football. Good news for Manchester United fans. Athletic Bilbao have suffered a triple injury blow ahead of their second leg at the Europa League semi-final at Old Trafford tomorrow with Nico and Iñaki Williams. Plus top scorer Ojan Sanset all ruled out. The trio were missing from the 24-man travelling squad named by Ernesto Valverde this morning. Even better news for Cork City fans. After 11 games out with a hamstring injury, former Republic of Ireland international Shawnee Maguire is in line to return to the front line for Cork City when they take on Derry City at Turner's Cross on Friday night. Maguire, who returned to the club last summer, suffered a hamstring injury in their game with Bohemians on March 3rd and has not played since. And Windsor Park, Paul, no more. The Irish Football Association has confirmed that Northern Ireland's home ground will be renamed the Clearer Twist National Stadium at Windsor Park after the agreement of a multi-million pound 8-year sponsorship deal.
Sounds daunting, that, doesn't it?
That's unfathomable riches that we're talking about there for what is an alcoholic mixer, I believe, Clearer Twist.
Interesting.
I was wondering, ever since I heard of the Clearer Twist Irish Cup, which Dungan and Swifts, of course, as you know, won there recently, I was always curious.
Must be something with drinks up that neck of the woods. It was the Milk Cup.
There was, yeah. The Milk Cup was fantastic. That's old school. I like that. I'd love to do a show on the Milk Cup and the Fairs Cup, but anyway, that's for another day. Dave Kilcoyne has confirmed his retirement from Paul Curry's most beloved sport, professional rugby. The 36-year-old played 220 times for Munster since making his debut in 2011. He also won 56 caps for Ireland. And finally, in racing, Aidan O'Brien has won a record-extending 11 Chester Fay Stakes victory. Lamborn was sent off the 11-8 favourite and scored by length and a half from Lazy Griff at 25-1. Lambourne's win was the second part of a Ballydoyle double as Mini Hawk, 13-8 favourite, scored in the listed Cheshire Oaks. However, let us reflect and review. Where do we begin, Paul Curry? Just sheer entertainment and Inter grinding out a victory. And I know we were discussing off air. I don't know about you, but it did feel like it made it a bit better. It was in the San Siro, an old school, really well-known, beloved ground. It had rain, it had passionate Italians. The camera cut to the crowd of one particular Italian fan who's gone a bit viral for his rambunctious celebrations and a bit of anger thrown in as well. The Fratesi climbing a yellow fence. It had everything.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? And it wasn't just last night. It was the first leg as well. And both teams deserve a huge amount of credit for the football they produced over the two legs. But you're right, it had everything, even from Inzaghi and the drenched Armani suit and extra time and everything that went along with it. But it was a fantastic game and it was an absolutely brilliant watch. I know people are very critical of Barcelona and how they defend. And yes, you can slow it down. You can identify that there's major gaps in their back four when they're not in possession of the football. But I prefer to look at what they do when they have it. Like they're on... They've already won Copa del Rey. They're going to win La Liga and they nearly went for the Champions League. So you can't be too critical of the style of play that they have. And I thought they were absolutely fantastic last night, Shane. I was devastated they didn't go through, to be honest with you. As a purist who enjoys probably the ball being played through the thirds and watching Lamal and Pedri and co just being so creative and opening up teams, I thought they were fantastic over the course of the two legs and very unlucky not to go through. And you would expect with the age profile of that team that they will certainly be back. But it was a game that just had absolutely everything. And fair play to Inter. Like, they grounded out even when they were down. They managed to find a way back in extra, to get to extra time with the late equaliser from a Serbian, even the Fratesi goal, and to manage to hang on for that last 10 minutes. They deserve a huge amount of credit. And Inzaghi deserves a huge amount of credit, because he has really turned that club around. Their record in Champions League is very, very strong. I know defensively they weren't brilliant over the course of two legs. That's probably more the fact that Barcelona is so strong. But he has them in such a way that they are so well drilled. Mm.
Yeah, you mentioned Serbi there. I noticed this on Twitter. Credit to Colin Miller. Recovered from cancer twice, aged 25. Only became a Serie A regular, aged 26. First trophy, aged 31. International tournament debut, aged 33. First league title, aged 36. UCL final, aged 35. And now another Champions League final, aged 37.
There's something with Italian centre halves. So that's an incredible journey that he has been on. But the durability of them to go so late and deep into their career and play at the highest.
Cellini.
Yeah, even if you go back, Nesta, Costa Curta, Cannavaro, yeah. Maldini. Like, there's so many names, and they have such a rich history of producing centre halves that can go late into their career. And I actually think Bastoni last night was superb, and he has been over the course of the Champions League. Like, it wasn't easy down that right hand side of Barcelona's. Yamal gave DeMarco a torrid time. Mkhitaryan was trying to come across as much as possible to double up. But I thought any time Yamal was in a 1v1 with Bastoni, his physicality and his presence maybe hampered Yamal a small bit, if you can say that. But defensively, very strong. It's scary to think what Yamal and Pedri are doing at their ages. Like, Yamal is 17 years of age, and only for summer last night, he would have had two or three. Like, the saves that Summer pulled off when he's cutting in, he's trying to guide it into the far corner. He's got so much in his game and his final product. Like, typically with younger players, you maybe question whether they have the right decision making or if they have the end product to create chances. He has absolutely everything. Like, so much came through him, and even an extra time when they were looking to create and carve out chances, it always seemed to go down that side. And he's going to have one hell of a career. I just pray that he goes injury free, because a talent like that. Messi was relatively lucky throughout his career, never sustained any major injuries. You would hope that Yamal would have that same sort of luck, because he is such a joy to watch.
We were discussing actually on yesterday's show with Mark Langdon and Alan Colley, even his temperament is unbelievable, and comparing Lamine Yamal to Messi at that age, or even Cristiano Ronaldo at that age as well. Mm. Park the injuries, and we can't predict that, but is there any fear of burnout?
Potentially. I mean,
we
saw with Pedri, didn't we? That year that Spain played the Euros in England, and then he went to the Olympics and he played over, I think, 100 games in that season, and he probably didn't hit the same levels for the next 3 or 4 months. And that would maybe be a little bit of a concern, because Spain tend to go so deep in these competitions. Barcelona are obviously going to play a huge amount of games within this season. You would like to hope not, Shane. You'd like to think that he'll be managed within that environment, but you do want to see as much of him as possible, because, like, as a creative force, the swivel of the hips, the comfort on the ball, the ability to take players on, the goals, the strikes. He just has so much in his game that he is such a joy to watch. And he's in a perfect environment there when you look around at what is there in support from typically Jules Koundé, who plays as a right fullback. You've got Pedri, Dani Olmo, Frankie de Jong. There's a brilliant balance to that Barcelona side, particularly when they're on the ball. I know defensively, listen, there's a couple of gaps that you can get at them, but as a whole, they are a fantastic side.
I must correct myself, my news headlines, and credit to John Fallon, friend of the show, who's a regular contributor. Sean, he got injured against Waterford, not Bohemians.
I do remember. It was.
I misspoke.
Yeah, it was in the box.
I always have to correct League of Ireland, because you don't want to get the wrong side of League of Ireland fans there. You don't want to get into Twitter of League of Ireland fans. Last night's match as well, you mentioned Jan Sommer, and the business Inter did. Like, I mean, selling Andre Onana, and it's been well documented his career to date at Manchester United for 55 million, signing Jan Sommer for under 7 million. I mean, they got Taremi, Zielinski, Mkhitaryan, De Vrij for free. They signed Dumfries, Bishek and Lautaro for all under 30 million euro. But just on Jan Sommer, just an absolute colossus. Like, what, he's 36, I think, 36, yeah. 37. But just an absolute colossus.
Yeah, he was last night, and he had a brilliant game, and he still conceded 3 goals.
I'm brushing over that part. I mind that part.
That he gave you an idea of how busy he was. But from the two that I mentioned earlier, with the Lamal strikes where he's trying to guide it into the far corner, the chance with Eric Garcia when Barcelona countered attack from the Inter Milan corner. They worked it brilliantly. It was a ball that was played across from Martin into Garcia. Now, Garcia probably should score, but the fact that Jan Sommer managed to get back and claw it out, it was a brilliant save. And I actually think his distribution with his feet as well is probably something that is underrated. He's able to clip balls into DeMarco and Dumfries or clip balls into Thuram's chest, and they play from there, Shane. And
just on that point, and because the comparison was made, I was watching it on Amazon, and Alan Shearer and John Champion were commenting, and they're kind of saying about Szczesny developing into a sweeper keeper at a later stage of his career. You would imagine it could be the same for Jan Sommer, given the age profile, that he probably wouldn't have had to play out from the back as much or play with his feet traditionally.
He probably hasn't had the luxury of playing with a team that dominates probably as many games as Inter Milan do in Serie A, but you can see he's extremely comfortable in that department. But he was busy, as were the back five, and Barcelona really put it up to him. Like, there was a stage when it was 2-0 and you were thinking, will Barcelona have enough to claw their way back into this tie? They absolutely battered into Milan in the second half. Like, they really looked dead on their feet after Rafinha's goal, and they just found a way. I know it was poor defending, and you can question Barcelona's shape at that stage of a game. You've got 2 or 3 minutes to see out. Just put your two banks of four together and actually defend. Mm-hmm. Like, Yamal took that shot on, hits the post, and probably about 60 seconds, 120 seconds later, Inter Milan get an equaliser. Maybe if you're being hypercritical, you say take it to the corner, kill the game.
That's not what Barca do.
And it's not in their DNA. You can be critical of some of the gaps. Like, they play such a ludicrously high line that if you do get it right and if you time it well, you can get in behind them. It's probably a similar style, to be honest to you, that Paris Saint-Germain play. But Paris Saint-Germain, I think, have the luxury of better defenders, and they probably execute it better. But you can see that Barcelona stamp, I guess it's come from Luis Enrique, is all over the Paris Saint-Germain team. But Barcelona will come again. I'd be sure of that. They probably missed Lewandowski at the top end of the pitch. I thought they missed Jules Koundé at right full, and they certainly look short of a centre-half or two.
Yeah.
Cubarsí will obviously develop into a fantastic player. He's still only 18 years of age. I thought Balde, who typically plays left-back, wasn't there, but Martin delivered two brilliant balls into the box for Almo and Eric Garcia. So they will come again. But for Inter Milan and Inzaghi, they are going to be a very, very difficult team to stop in the final. I know Paris Saint-Germain are likely to face them, and they've been brilliant over the last couple of weeks. But even when Man City were firing on all cylinders, when they got the Champions League final, it was a very tight game against Inter. And Inzaghi will have his team so well drilled, irrespective of which team they come up against.
Okay. Well, most people, as you outlined there, expect Paris Saint-Germain to be playing Inter Milan in the Champions League final. What are the chances of Arsenal causing an upset this evening?
I personally don't see it, and probably for two reasons, Shane. I think Arsenal have come off the boil in the last couple of weeks. Well, probably months, actually. They probably haven't played too well in the last 6 to 8 weeks. And
they've only won 3 of their last 10 league fixtures. Narrow home victories over Chelsea and Fulham, and a 4-0 success at Ipswich, who, to be fair, had 10 men. Losing 2-1 at home to Bournemouth on Saturday. Like,
I was astonished you didn't rest players for that game.
But it's a case of they were looking nailed on to be just, they'll finish second. But now you have Manchester City creeping up, and they're only 3 points clear of City, and Liverpool playing Arsenal this weekend. And I know Liverpool were defeated last weekend, but
I think he played that team because I think he's searching for rhythm within the side, and I think he was hoping that if they got a good performance against Bournemouth, then they would maybe roll into the game against Paris Saint-Germain tonight with a bit more confidence in the side. Martin Odegaard's output is way down. Like, his goals and assists have dried up in the last couple of weeks. And Saka is only just back from his hamstring injury and probably looks like he's a couple of weeks short of getting into, you know, fifth gear. And for those reasons, I'm not sure they have the goals nor the creativity at the top end of the pitch that they did maybe earlier on in the season. And my worry for Arsenal would be, Shane, if Paris Saint-Germain score first and it becomes 2-0 on aggregate, if Arsenal have to chase the game, Paris Saint-Germain have so many players.
Just pick them off.
And you look at the Arsenal back four, you could have potentially Kivior and Saliba being a little bit exposed if they have to go chase the game, and then you have Doué, Dembélé and Kvaratskhelia who can just hurt you so quickly on transition. So I don't see it. That's not to say that it won't happen. They are very dangerous from set pieces. We've seen that throughout the Premier League campaign and in the Champions League. They can potentially find a goal from somewhere. Declan Rice will be freed up a little more in this game with Thomas Partey coming back from suspension.
How big is that Partey coming back?
I think that's
solidified the midfield.
Yeah, Thomas Partey's up there with one of the better, if not the best, screening midfielders in the Premier League, in my opinion. Obviously, Rodri is top of the pops there, and you've got Saicedo at Chelsea. But Thomas Partey does a brilliant job of not only cleaning up and screening in front of the back four, but he's brilliant in possession. He tends to play forward and gets Arsenal on the front foot. But what it also means is that Declan Rice gets freed up from having played kind of that six role last week to being more of a number eight. He's got presence, he's got energy, he can join in with the players at the top end of the pitch. And while he's played that position for Arsenal, I think he scored 12 goals in 50 games. So he's actually contributing a hell of a lot more than maybe people realise. So him being freed up to join into attack gives them a little bit more going forward. But I don't think this is... like, this is not the Arsenal side that we saw last year go very close in the Premier League. They're not playing with that same sort of fluidity that maybe when they're at their brilliant best, they look so good going forward. And they're coming up against a side in Paris Saint-Germain who have just looked flawless over the last couple of weeks. Rested a huge number of players, I think, for the game against Strasbourg on the weekend. They will come into this fresh and fit, and you can be assured that under Luis Enrique, they will be stubborn, they'll come out, they will play, they will trust each other in possession, and they will hurt Arsenal, I'm sure, at some stage tonight.
And there'll also be a point, you would imagine, from management that you need to be more clinical. I know they had a host of chances, but even late on, it was Barcola missed a great chance, Gonçalo Ramos hit the crossbar with a toe poke as well. Okay, they're creating the chances. Now, to be fair, Arsenal had a couple of chances. Donnarumma made some excellent saves, and it could come down to what Donnarumma. We might even see that the Klose's presence, similar to Jan Sommer last night, or that is a keeper that does have a mistake in him.
Yeah, and excuse me for pointing out the obvious here, but the first goal is going to be really important. Mm. I know last night Barcelona went 2 down and they were chasing the game.
And that's the mood. It's home advantage. It's the mood
of the fans
as well.
Yeah, it is. And but you felt within Barcelona that they had enough to claw back a 2-goal deficit. If Paris Saint-Germain go ahead tonight, I'm not sure Arsenal have enough to claw back 2 goals. There will naturally be a lot of nerves around the ground tonight. Like, Paris Saint-Germain do have a lot of pressure on themselves to go and win a Champions League with the Qatari owners. There's younger players in this squad that maybe haven't experienced too many Champions League semi-final nights. That could play into it. But from what we've seen from Paris Saint-Germain over the last couple of rounds in the Champions League is they don't tend to get too phased. There was probably a moment against Aston Villa where they looked a little bit shaky. But outside of that, they've been... pretty impressive in the work that they've done. So the first goal will be huge tonight, Shane. If Paris Saint-Germain get it, I think it's curtains for Arsenal. But if Arsenal get it, it is very much game on.
Okay, well, hopefully it is half as entertaining. I'll take half as entertaining as last night.
I think we all would.
Yeah. I'm not writing Arsenal's old bit at the moment. But however, if they were to go out of the Champions League, now listen, getting to a Champions League semi-final isn't to be scoffed at. Is there a concern that the season might unravel it a small bit, considering if City do catch up with them, if they get thumped at the weekend and there's pressure then on Mikel Arteta?
It's funny, isn't it? Because there seems to be a certain Arsenal fan that doesn't seem too happy with Mikel Arteta. And of course, people will beat him with the stick that he hasn't won a major trophy. He's, what, one FA Cup since he's been there? And I think he says a community shield or two.
They all count.
They do. But really what he'll be measured on is the Premier League and the Champions League and maybe an FA Cup if he was to get one. And while he doesn't win one of those trophies, I think there'll be that segment of fans who are just unhappy with what is happening at Arsenal. I think that would be very much the opposite of what the owners think and feel. You can very quickly forget where Arsenal were 6 or 7 years ago when they seemed, you know, quite a distance away from the top sides in the Premier League. They went very close over the last 2 years. Yes, their points total is going to be quite a bit down on what they produced last year, but I think you can still see the signs of improvement within the squad. You can see the direction that Arteta is trying to take them. They are probably 2, 3, 4 bodies still short. They, you know, there's obviously that gap at the top end of the pitch with a centre forward that they need. But they've also had a lot of injuries at the top end of the pitch that you can maybe excuse them a little bit for maybe some of the points that they dropped over the last couple of weeks and months. But I think Arteta is safe. If he was to win the Champions League, I mean, he's safe for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
But even if he was to go out tonight and if he was to finish second, I can't imagine that there's going to be too much pressure from the Arsenal owners. Now, if they were to start the league in a terrible run of form, well, then maybe there might be a little more eyes put over him in charge and whether or not the money that is invested is they're seeing the correct kind of return on that. But for now, he's safe as house.
Okay. To lay down a market for next season, I think, who was it? Troy Deeney, maybe, of all people, said, don't give a guard of honour to Liverpool. Lay down the market. Lay down the mental market for next season. Who knows how this evening will play out. Arsenal have lost only one of their last 17 away matches in all competitions. So there's a bit of hope travelling to Paris. For now, we'll leave the conversation there. Paul Corrie, thank you as always. We are turning our attention to Gaelic games. Damien Lawler joins us next after the break.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, RT Sports' Damien Lawler joins us on the line with the latest Gaelic Games news. Now, Damien, we had Aoife Murray and Ursula Jacob on yesterday's show outlining the ongoing shorts-scorts issue for Camogie players. Since then, Marty Morrissey had a story that Camogie President Brian Molloy may bring a motion to Congress for 2026. As it stands, it can't be voted on again until 2027, as it was defeated at the most recent Congress. But that's not going to change anything for this year, the current championship. So, more pressingly, as we were discussing the story yesterday, you yourself broke a story on the RT Sport website about the possibility of counties seeking a relaxation of the rule to be implemented immediately. So we have a Munster and we have an Ulster final this weekend. And to bring the story on even further, Cork's Aisling Thompson was speaking on the News at One with Rachel English, and she basically outlined that Cork players will refuse to wear skorts in the Camogie final and will not take the field if they do have to wear skorts. They will be lining out in shorts.
Across the board, we're going to wear shorts on the day. I think that's what we do have to finalise, I suppose, and have a chat on that during the week leading up to the Munster final. But I think what we're going to do is wear shorts, and if we're asked to return to the dressing room, we won't. And if that means abandoning the game and handing over the Munster title to Waterford, that's what we'll do. We're just hoping that Waterford will follow suit. And you know, again, this is not about making a statement. It's kind of standing up for what's right, I guess, and you know, creating something that will affect, I guess, in a good way, like younger athletes down the line when they do get to represent not only their counties, but their clubs too, that like they will have a choice. And, you know, maybe this might be the push that everybody needs to get over the line in this decision.
Going back to the Munster final, I mean, presumably it would be a very difficult thing to do if you had to forfeit this game after, as you say, all the work you put in, all the training that players now have to do.
It's extremely disappointing that it has come to this, especially on, you know, such an occasion as being a Munster final. So, look, again, we're looking at the bigger picture and what it means for the younger generation coming through. And as Cork players, we're very proud in terms of how we carry ourselves and how we wear that jersey. But how we can, I suppose, influence the younger generation is the biggest thing for Cork and probably why we're successful in terms of tradition and generation. So, that's really the main focus for us, and if it means giving up that title, like, that's exactly what we'll do.
Aisling Thompson, of course, there speaking on the News at One. And now, Malachy Clerkin had in the Irish Times as well that Dublin Camogie has instructed its referees to allow games to go ahead even if players refuse to wear skorts. I know Vincent's and Good Counsel last night, they played in shorts. St Vincent's, Aisling Mara's club, of course, Dublin captain. So with all of that said, what is your understanding from the Camogie Association's point of view, Damien? Like, where are we at the moment?
Well, it's very hard to get a gleaning from the Camogie Association, Shane. You know, they did release a statement of, I suppose they communicated a few days ago, and they said that the skirt had been looked at by manufacturers and it was still in the design stages and it'll be back to try and make that product more comfortable. If I was to hang my hat on any outcome at the moment, it would be the story that I had yesterday evening, Shane, that you had on yesterday evening show about the derogation option. Because quite simply, from my investigation or research, there's no way that players are going to wait until 2026 to get this resolved. They just feel it's absolutely time has come to do this now. As you say, county boards are taking matters in their own hands. You had Dublin doing what they did. They will allow shorts to be played at the weekend, allegedly, the Dublin Camogie Board. You know, according to law, there'll be a fine then for the clubs that don't adhere to the skirt rule. But I think you can expect the fine to be very, very, very minimal. Elsewhere, then, counties are researching what they can do. And that rule that we had last night in our story, Rule 10.5 of the Camogie Association official guide, whereby an exemption or relaxation of a rule can be made on the basis of counties proving that, you know, the reputation and the status of the association has been affected in a negative light. Now, that's me paraphrasing, but that's the rule in essence. And I don't think counties will have too much work to do to collect data to suggest that that is the case, because the negative publicity that's been coming for the bones of a week now at the association is very damaging. It's very detrimental. Many of the people commenting would not be even able to tell you the result of the match between Kilkenny and Dublin. So what point I'm trying to make here is the sport is in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. You know, it's become politicians are talking about it, players are really talking about it. And the latest then today, Shane, is that the GPA reps and the intercounty captains are having a call, possibly as we speak, to decide the next course of action. But I would be amazed if anything that Aisling has said there, or indeed up north, will be reversed. I do feel there'll be a protest again at the weekend. It's up to the Camogie Association now, I guess, to see what their next step is. They've made the point that, you know, that this was passed. All four motions were defeated at Congress. There's a democracy there. They've made the point that their staff and the volunteers have received abuse. Match officials that were involved in certain games have received abuse. Well, you can't have that. That's disgraceful, carry on. But none of this, in my opinion, can continue over something that practically needs to be sorted out very, very soon. And Shane, it's a very emotive issue. We discussed it on the Sunday game and Sunday night. I saw some online flack about the, you know, three males discussing an issue like that. But it affects many people. I would have felt that if we ignored the issue, we were doing it a disservice. I'm off to a Camogie match now in the next hour or so. I'm involved in the backroom team of an underage Camogie team that my daughter plays in. And, you know, this sort of stuff is affecting everybody at grassroots all the way up. And I think the sooner it's nipped in the bud, the absolute better for anybody. Certainly the 2026 option, I couldn't see players going along that far. I could see a derogation being sought and then maybe relaxation of that rule until it was voted in 2026. That's a different outlook.
Okay, one to watch over the coming days, even before the Munster and Ulster Camogie finals this weekend. In men's Gaelic football, we have the Ulster final on Saturday evening, 5:25, throw-in Armagh, Donegal and Clonus, and then on Sunday, 4:15 for Louth and Meath. The Leinster Championship is alive and well, Damien. Sunday's Leinster football final is set to draw an attendance in excess of 50,000 in what would be the best attended final since 2017.
Yeah. Long may it continue, Shane. You know, in fairness to Dublin, they have had a grip of that province for so long now. You know, unbelievable football, unbelievable dominance. Louth came within four of them last year, and that is the closest anybody got to Dublin, you know, at that stage since 2012, and in the final as well. And I guess that, you know, over 30,000 tickets had actually been sold this day last week. So if the weather is good, Shane, you could get well in excess to 50 at this, you know, and it's a massive, massive occasion for both counties. You know, obviously people are going to talk about the 2010 final. That will have an emotional hold on supporters. But what you have here is Robbie Brennan, newly in charge of Meath, having to cope with two coaches leaving the scene at the end of the Allianz League, having narrowly missed out on promotion to division to the higher tier. They came in third place. And I suppose really a couple of, well, three championship wins so far, and they've scored very, very well. Up against a Louth side managed by Gerard Brennan, you know, did quite well against Dublin in the final last year, have been very patchy this year in both the league and championship. Started off very poorly against Laois in the Leinster Championship, started off very poorly against Kildare, but have shown serious resilience to come back in both games. This is their third Leinster final on the spin, and they will feel that they have to get over the line at a time where their minors are motoring very well and their under-20s recently won a Leinster title, and news of their stadium finally going ahead having emerged last week. So it's a bumper time to be a Louth supporter, but none of that will count for a massive amount if the senior team don't get over the line at the weekend coming. And really looking forward to that, Shane.
Okay, well, you were speaking to both managers. We can hear from Louth's Gerard Brennan and first meet Robbie Brennan about the belief in the camp.
It's a huge part of it, and like I suppose going down to Port Laois to play Dublin, there was no point going down without that belief. So, but ultimately, you can say all that stuff, the players still have to deliver, and whether they believe it or not, they certainly went out and did that. Was there any danger at all with the people argued that 50, that win might have been a 15-point win at half time? Was there any danger at all that you would retreat back into your shell and that they would just come at you and fire out inevitable late win? You didn't let that happen, but why was that?
Yeah, we obviously that was the danger at half time. I certainly felt it was probably a 15-point win. We needed 15, maybe even 16, because how good Dublin are. And scoring threats from everywhere, effectively. But at the same time, we were trying to figure out where we could score against that breeze and get into certain areas. And again, the lads kind of held on to it and managed that piece quite well.
The games before it, then, Robbie, like, you had Carlow and you had Offaly as well. And maybe O'Carlow was maybe just a case of, I suppose, both camps had a bit of stuff going on in the background, but you wanted to get that game out of the way. And then the Offaly challenge, they're an up-and-coming side as well, so it wasn't easy.
No, that's a brilliant Offaly team, and I think they're going to be around and have a big say in a lot of competitions going forward over the next couple of years. So ultimately, we're delighted to get over that Offaly one, because I was quite worried going into that for loads of different reasons, but delighted to get through that. And then you have Dublin, and it's a free swing, for want of a better word, and we took our shot, thankfully, on the day.
You happy? I'd say you're happy now, but were you happy with the decision of Leinster just to take the semi-finals out of Croke Park? And they were firm on that from the start.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, it's easy to say it, obviously, from where we're sitting, but would you have had that atmosphere in Croke Park, even though it was a brilliant day? You wouldn't. I mean, there was, 10,000-odd in Portlaoise, but the atmosphere was absolutely hopping. So, no, I think it was the right decision. And look, if you win, then you get your chance in Croke Park in the final, and that's probably the way it should be, yeah.
Robbie, when you took over this team, what exactly were you looking for from the players?
Yeah, it was just that first was the buy-in, obviously, and then you mentioned it yourself, Tim, that belief that really to back themselves, because they're all good footballers, you know. I've been to enough club games and championship matches in Meath to realise that, and just let them go out and actually show that, and they're starting to do that now, thankfully.
You managed at a very, very high level of club. Is there much of a transfer over, much of a switch over? Is your phone on 10 hours more at inter-county level, or what's the difference?
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt about that. It is. It's probably on the fact that it's a shorter season, obviously, in the club. If you go well, you have the whole year nearly, so it's probably more time to do stuff. For here, it's quite hot and heavy, and you're at it. There's no real break, but it's enjoyable at the same time, yeah.
Ger, a Leinster fine to look forward to. It's a fantastic occasion, but I guess you've been there last year, and the lads were there before that as well. I suppose it's one thing going for the occasion, but there's a cup at stake as well.
Absolutely, Damien. It's the third year in a row that this group are in the Leinster final, so there's a bit more, I guess, maturity amongst the group. And even after the semi-final victory over Kildare, it was a bit subdued in the dressing room. We won, we hadn't played great, but we're into a Leinster final. You know, we've been the bridesmaids now for the last 2 years, and now it's time to be the bride and hopefully put one over Meath in the Leinster final.
Sure, with Kildare and the game before that, I suppose they both got off to good starts, but just before I focus on that, the resilience factor, that's alive and well with you guys anyway, and that's a good thing.
And resilience is something that is hard to coach. It's something that fellas have to go through. They need to be knocked back, and then they need to find a way and to come out the other side of those tight victories. Leash and Kildare, they kind of posed two different challenges to us in terms of style of football. I thought Leash were quite methodical in structure and how they built the pitch, whereas Kildare were much more direct and asked big questions of our defenders, and that should set us up well going in against Meath, who are able to mix it up both styles of football.
Just go back to the resilience thing again. I against Dublin in last year's Leinster final, just the way you rallied in the second half, and the levels of football that you produced, and you've seen flashes of it in the league, and again you've seen it in the championship. Is it just to get that over a more consistent period of time? Would that be nearly the key for you guys?
And that is the challenge for any management team, Damon, is how can you, I suppose, maximise your purple patches within games, and then when the momentum is beginning to turn toward the opposition, what strategies can you come up to try to re-arrest control? And that's something that we haven't managed to get right just yet, bar probably League Game 7 against Meath in Inishkeen. So there's been moments of really good play in the quarterfinal and semi-final of this year's Leinster Championship for Louth. But overall, there's big improvements to be made. Now, some of the reasons for that is cohesion amongst the playing group, with guys coming back in who are more experienced, even integrating them with some of the new guys. It does take time. Hopefully, it doesn't take as long Sunday football, it certainly does take time, you know, but it is something we're aware of and that we're working towards.
I can see that from the outside. You have players come back from injury and you have a lot of experience, but you have a lot of an infusion of younger players there in the last two seasons as well. And that's not simple to get all that in a package.
No, it's not. And it's finding that blend, which is obviously key. And then in terms of the style of football you're looking to play as well, can you get the right guy in the right position all in? I think Loud, we've 14 fellas played for Loud this year that didn't play last year. 8 are brand new. And then you look at how successful the 20s are at the moment, and Fergal Real is doing a great job there, and a wonderful victory over Meath in the Leinster final there recently. So there's a lot going well, and there's a lot of players who are putting their hand up for selection. And while during the National League we were wondering how many fellas we'd have for training, now the challenge we have is who are we going to pick for the Leinster final, which is a great headache to have.
Now, we will be previewing both the Leinster and Ulster provincial finals on Friday, showing the company of Brendan Devaney. Elsewhere this weekend, Damien, we have Tailteann Cup throwing in as counties look to become the fourth winners of the Tailteann Cup, thus guaranteeing themselves an automatic place in next year's All-Ireland Championship if they fail to qualify via the provincial championships. What fixture, or indeed fixtures, stand out for you this weekend, Damien?
Yeah, Shane, look, to answer your question, Kildare versus Leitrim stands out for me a little bit, simply because Kildare, for, you know, the margins are so tight, they could quite easily have been getting themselves ready for a Leinster final this weekend. Instead, they're not. They're playing Leitrim in St. Conlon's Park, Cedral St. Conlon's Park. And the margins are so fine. And, you know, instead of playing in front of a crowd of maybe 55,000 people, with a chance to win silverware, which would be incredible for the county. You know, they have to go back into the lower steps of the ladder, and they have to take on a Leitrim team that would be well organised and gave Mayo lots of it the last time. So that game does stand out for me, and it'll be interesting to see. I was at the Tailteann Cup launch yesterday. 16 players were there. It was interesting to see the body language and the approach of many players there. You know, there was certainly no escaping the fact that a couple of players were lamenting the fact that they weren't in the Sam Maguire, you know. I won't mention their names or counties, but, you know, having said all that, they realised that they are back in the Tailteann Cup. It is a springboard back to the Sam Maguire next year. They will get a chance to play in Croke Park in front of a large crowd if they do reach a final. You know, there will be prizes for doing that from the association. And I suppose it's a bit of prestige. And the reality is, not many players get to play in Croke Park, and certainly not every intercounty player gets to play in Croke Park. And that will be the goal, to try and get back there on final time. But I think many counties will be looking for it as a reason to get back into the Sam Maguire football, and then for several other counties, it really is, being realistic about it, the only championship silverware that they can win. So why would you not go full tilt for it? From my own perspective, I think Kildare will give it an unbelievable shot at it. I think Offaly will too. Sligo have reached the last two semi-finals. They're more than equipped to get over the line, but they need it badly. And then you see Westmeath, having won it previously, have been unlucky in the Sam Maguire and Leinster Championship on a number of occasions. Now they're back, and, you know, their attitude will have to be go at it again and try and get back to where they feel they should be. So it's a good competition. We're into another season of it, and the games will roll on frenetically over the next few weeks.
Okay, great stuff. Lots to look forward to. For now, we'll leave the conversation there. Damien Lawler, thanks so much for joining us here on Game On.
Game On. Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty joins us to chat you all the latest provincial action. Before we do, Nadine, we were speaking to Damien there just before the break, and we heard from Cork's Aisling Thompson about the ongoing shorts issue. A joint statement on behalf of the Cork and Waterford senior camogie panels has just reached us from the GPA. It states, "We look forward to representing ourselves, our clubs, our counties and our supporters in Saturday's Munster final. We will not be making any further media comment ahead of the game, as our concentration is focused on putting on our best possible performance. We will be at the Rag in Tipperary with the intention of getting the better of each other on the field of play. We will be togged out wearing shorts. That is our choice." And there ends the statement from the GPA. It's a powerful comment to make before a Munster final. And I know we've heard from Ashton Thompson and Aoife Murray, or Sir Jacob, were on the show yesterday, and Niamh Rockett was doing some media interviews this evening as well. It would seem, or it's pointing in the direction, that player power will prevail.
Yes, but I suppose releasing that statement today firmly puts the ball on the side, the court of the Camogie Association. Mm. It'll give them time. I suppose they have a few days to decide if they'll, I suppose, formally enter into talk, Shane, with the GPA and with the players, I think, because I do think that's what it has to come down to. I think we'll see this trend across the board, across the championship. I just think all of these Camogie players, they're uniting as one. And I think at the minute, silverware is very much coming second. I think this year and this summer, they see a bigger and more important cause. And it's unfortunate that this is happening and it's detracting away from what's happening on the field. But, you know, there's been huge talk all week, obviously. For me, I just go back to 12 months ago or 13 months ago when the Camogie Association Congress 2024 happened. And, you know, Camogie Association keep going back to this democratic vote and so on. For me, I just think it was a massive opportunity missed by the association to show that they are progressive, that they do have the players' best in mind. And it was just so disappointing that they didn't come out and back that motion, Shane, and ask for a yes vote. The players couldn't do that because they don't have speaking rights at Congress. The GPA didn't have speaking rights at Congress. So for me, I think that's where the biggest mistake has been made so far in all the saga. It wasn't the vote because, you know, the delegates vote whatever way they want to vote. But we all know in terms of democracy that those in power have a big, big say on where the vote goes, Shane. So I just think that for me, across the board, has been a huge disappointment.
Well, it is very much a developing story. And as Aoife Murray even outlined yesterday, hopefully we will be giving the Camogie Championship, the provincial finals, as much attention as well as we do here on Wednesday evenings, and looking at provincial action and on-field matters in the, where we get Munster Senior Championship, because Kerry just about got over the line against Waterford. How close were Waterford to causing an upset against Kerry?
Oh, very, Shane. And, you know, we spoke about this last week, that if Waterford were able to, I suppose, impose their game, which is a counter-attacking game, they're physical, they're strong, they're dogged in defence, if they were able to impose that on Kerry and, I suppose, stop Kerry from playing the football that we're used to seeing them play, they'd have a chance. They did that. They were excellent. They stuck with Kerry all the way. You know, at the end, Kellyanne Hogan had a chance. You wouldn't even call it a chance. I suppose she just kind of went for it. She went for the goal and it whizzed over the bar and they fell short. But, you know, Kerry's goals proved the difference. And again, it's going back to who we talk about every week. Aoife O'Shea, a little bit of genius. She had a great flick goal. She was involved in a lot. And I spoke about it last week about how they'd miss Kaylee Cronin in this particular game. And they did, because she has this brilliant ability, I suppose, to stem those teams from flowing through the middle. And that's what Waterford are brilliant at. They've brilliant ball carriers in Kellyanne Hogan and the Murrays and McGregor. So they were very close. They were excellent. But they have another chance this week, Shane, to make that Munster final. They'll play Cork.
Essentially a semi-final. Waterford Cork, 2 o'clock in Dungarvan on Sunday. Just to mention, Cork 3-13 to 11-point winners over Tipperary. So a fairly comprehensive victory, business as usual for the Cork football. I just give the score for the Kerry match. It was 2-9 to 1-11. So they'll want a response against a Cork team that are coming to it in decent form as well.
Oh, very much so. And scoring goals, Shane, and looking really good. I think what we spoke about, the Cork-Kerry game, I suppose, the first week, both teams kind of held back, I felt, a little, but Cork really went for it. They went for it on their team sheet. They lined out very strong. But I suppose looking at their game against Waterford, Waterford probably have more experience now in that team than Cork do, just in terms of inter-county level. Cork are, I wouldn't say still in that development process. They're very much there now. They're kind of on a 2-3 year cycle. Whereas with Waterford, are on year 5, I would feel. They're very strong, as we said. They're very physical. I don't know what way this is going to go. I really don't. I feel if Waterford...
Are Waterford at a stage, you know, of their development where it's now or never?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Especially for Munster Championship, Shane. Definitely. Because we know that they can take scalps here and there. But that's grand. I don't think Waterford want to be that team. If you ask any intercounty manager, because I've spoken to a lot over the years, if you ask anybody, you know, who do you really hate playing? The majority of them say Waterford, but Waterford don't, you know, they don't want to hear that. They want to be winning trophies. So yeah, definitely, I feel in this cycle with them, because there's players going to Australia and so on. But I think for them, they have to handle Katie Quirk. I think the Cork full back line is becoming very important for them. Melissa Duggan, excellent cornerback, also excellent in attack. Shauna Kelly brings huge experience in there. She's holding the line. And then you add Eric O'Shea at halfback. I think those three players could be key. But if Waterford play the way they played against Kerry and are able to add goals to their game, they're in with every shout. But I think Cork will go in as slight favourites. For me anyway, just slightly.
Okay, so that's round three of the Munster round robin, essentially a semi-final. Just to note, Kerry will play Tipperary in Austin Stock Park in Tralee on Sunday at 2 o'clock. Kerry already through to the Munster final. Tipperary will finish bottom of the group and they will then be in the All-Ireland groups in a group with the Connacht champions and Ulster runners-up, just to mention as well. So that is what we do know. In Leinster then, we talk about Waterford nearly upsetting Kerry. Kildare reeled off the last 3 points but left it too little too late at home to Meath.
Yeah, Meath were, geez, they were nervy in that last 10 minutes. They were cruising 10 minutes ago. They were up by 8, playing high-pressing, high-tempo football. They were very impressive throughout. You know, they, for me, they went in as favourites and they very much matched that tag. Now, there was 6 minutes of injury time as well, so you could say for that last 15 minutes, Kildare put them under pressure. Meath were deserving winners over the 70, but I suppose with Kildare, they were always dangerous because of the talent they have up front. They were always there, thereabouts. Even though Meath were up by 8, Kildare went down the pitch a couple of times, Shane, and they were able to get back-to-back scores, which is very important in any game of football. And Alana Prizeman, wonderful footballer off frees, and I suppose that performance from Kildare and almost getting over the line shows how important a free taker is, because not every team has one, not even the top teams. And then again, look, with Roisin Byrne and Asa Dooley, with them in attack, you're always in with the chance of getting a result. But yeah, look, it's another Dublin Meath Leinster final, and Meath will have the crowd this time on Croke Park.
They will. A double header on Sunday, just to mention, which is good to see. Dublin Meath at 2 o'clock throw in for the ladies' final, and in the men's final, Loud Meath at 4:15, Boughton Croke Park on Sunday. How are Meath fixed? Like, Dublin are obviously going to be favourites going into this one.
Yeah, massive favourites, obviously, because of results this year so far, and their performance against Meath, which was only 2 weeks ago, their league game. I feel Dublin very much have the measure of Meath at the minute.
Are we in a territory here of landslide victory concerns?
No, I wouldn't think so. And Meath always perform in Croke Park, Shane. Don't forget that. That is true. I can't remember the last time they lost there, because they won the intermediate, the two seniors. They won a couple of league finals. You know, their big players love the wide open space of Croke Park. Carla Rowe hasn't played in a while for Dublin. She's a big player in Croke Park. Like, it's all well and good going down to Navan and, you know, winning a game there by whatever. But the big questions are always asked in Croke Park. I do see Dublin as favourites. I do, but I don't think they'll have it all their own way. And with that Meath crowd, and the Meath crowd will come in early, Shane, in fairness to them.
How much of a factor will that be?
I think it's a big factor. You know, I do think it's a big factor. If Meath get a run on Dublin, you know, a couple of points on the board, things are tight. You know, that we talk about experience, and yes, that Dublin team has a huge amount of experience, but the big players in Croke Park aren't really there anymore, and that's why I see Carla Rowe as a big factor.
Yeah.
Sinead Goldrick, in 15 years, I've never seen her have a bad game in Croke Park. But then you flip that with Vicky Wall, Emma Duggan, haven't seen them have a bad game. So look, I think it will be tight, but I think Dublin should win.
Okay.
They should win. Okay. Can Meath win? Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Who should win the Ulster final? Because that one throws in at 3 p.m. on Saturday in Clonus. Again, a doubleheader with the men's final. So Armagh, Donegal playing the men's final, as they do in the ladies' final. The men's final throwing in at 5:25 and 3 o'clock for the ladies' final as well. So who should win that one?
Well, I'm not talking Donegal down, but
impartially.
Listen, Donegal have played well in Division 2. Armagh were the form team of the year. They got to the Division 1 final, well beaten in fairness by Kerry, but you know, looking at that and performances, Armagh have to go in as favourites. But in saying that, from the last couple of Ulster finals, last year it was level, went into extra time, Armagh just got over the line. They were heavy favourites, obviously, last year as well. The year before, Donegal pipped them. They totally took them by surprise. So Donegal have every chance. They always perform in Clonus. It'd be a massive upset, because I suppose those other Ulster finals, Donegal still had that cohort of players still playing, the, you know, the McLaughlins and Emer Gallagher and those girls, Karen Guthrie, who were hanging on for that All-Ireland. They're gone now. You know, those girls are gone. It is very much a rebuilding process overall. Niamh McLaughlin is still there. You know, there's still quality within the camp. Karen Guthrie is still involved as a mentor, as far as I know. So look, they do have a chance, but it's very slim. But listen, again, no more than the Meath crowd being in there, hopefully the Donegal and Armagh crowd go in early to support the girls. And it will be a good game of football regardless. Like, I can't see it being a landslide victory for Armagh.
But they'll have a bit of a point to prove from the league final as well.
I don't even know about a point to prove. I think for them, they need to get the wheels back you know, and they need to do it now because they're looking at other teams in other provinces who have two and three, four games behind them in Munster. So I think Armagh are looking at it in that we get the wheels back on the road now and get the Ulster Championship and move forward from there.
Okay, final one, just briefly to mention, in Connacht, Galway were big winners over Leitrim, 2-22 at the 5 points. Galway Mayo will be the Connacht final on May 25th. So there might be a bit of shadow boxing come 1 o'clock Sunday in Tuam. So hard to read into.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know how much shadow boxing will go on. I could see Galway winning handily again. Aoife Geraghty will probably be back. Catherine Sullivan get a bit of game time in, haven't been injured. But yeah, I think a comfortable win for Galway is on the cards.
Okay, great stuff. As always, Nadine, thank you so much. Just to mention, good news for Arsenal fans, Ousmane Dembele starts on the bench for PSG. Starting 11, Donnarumma, Hakimi, Marquinhos, Pacho, Mendes, Neves, Vitinha, Ruiz, Barcola, Doué, Kvaratskhelia, Shkelia for PSG, and for Arsenal, Raya, Timber, Saliba, Kvyat, Lewis, Skelly, Odegaard, Partey, Rice, Saka, Marino, Martinelli. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. Big thanks to our producer, John Farrow, our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davis. Do not go anywhere because Beta De Silva is up with the new music show at 7 o'clock. First, we're going to take a short ad break and check in with the news desk. From myself, Shane Dawson, and all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Bye-bye.